Hi, it's Greg and Lucky.
And this is our podcast. If you don't catch us from 5 to 9, this is what you missed.
The Oscars lied to us a couple of times. First of all, Messi the dog from Anatomy of a Fall wasn't even in the audience.
Shocking turn of events.
Not during the actual broadcast anyway. His appearance was pre-recorded with a bunch of seat fillers. And John Cena was not totally naked when he presented the award for costumes.
Right.
He wore one of those thongs that covers your package and your backside, then connects under your tea and sugar.
All right.
Leaves your sides naked.
He was naked enough for a black tie event.
Yeah.
It's still ballsy to get out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
But when you got that frame.
Right. Yeah. But even still, to do that is just pretty crazy.
I'm sure there was some grooming involved as well.
You want to make sure.
Yeah. Because maybe even the envelope, his particular envelope, was a larger envelope.
Gotcha. Yes.
I'm thinking.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And are people surprised by this? I mean, it is Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's technically what they do all the time.
Yeah. They're able to have sex scenes in movies where it looks like everybody's naked.
Right.
Yeah. I, for the life of me, will never know how things don't get embarrassing.
Oh, my goodness. There's a great clip. The Graham Norton Show is such a great talk show if you don't watch it or see clips of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're sitting around, they're drinking on the couch, and he gets fantastic guests.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone seems a lot more laid back. And I'm trying to think. I think it was Samuel L. Jackson who was talking about the awkwardness of those scenes.
The sex scenes.
Because it's awkward if you get excited or embarrassing, right? Mm-hmm. You kind of have to say, hey, listen, I'm sorry in advance.
Yeah.
If I happen to get excited here. And then he said, it's just as embarrassing if you don't get excited.
Right. Right.
Like, here we are in the midst of this and it's doing nothing for me.
Like, I just always remember seeing, The True Detective with Woody Harrelson.
Right.
When him and that beautiful actress with the blue eyes, she was
Alexandra Daddario?
Yes. She gets like almost completely naked and is riding him on the couch. He must have been stoned out of his gourd to keep things. Because I would have been like, stop. Think taxes.
I mean, and some have said the cooling factor in all of that is the number of people in the room.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure, let's go with that.
Certainly for the ladies, I would think, too, because, you know, here you got like 30 dudes sitting around with beer bellies and darts hanging out of their mouth.
Eating donuts.
Just watching this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, let's look at this.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it. Anyhow, other things that went on behind the scenes at the Oscars. Jimmy Kimmel says he was encouraged backstage not to read Donald Trump's social media post. If you remember, if you saw it.
It came out late in the show.
Yeah, Trump went off about how Jimmy's terrible and a horrible host and not funny and not interesting. So he brought his phone out and read the whole post.
Right.
And then turned around and said, isn't it past your jail time, Donald?
Yeah.
And everybody loved that.
I mean, it was pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like it had been written way ahead of time in terms of the joke.
His wife was the one backstage who said, don't do it. Leave it alone. Just let it go.
Oh.
And he couldn't. And so now she's saying, I'm never going to win an argument at home ever again.
Right.
Because it probably got one of the biggest laughs of the night.
Well, I mean, he also knew his audience.
Sure.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're in Hollywood at the Oscars. It's pretty left-leaning.
Oh, sure. Al Pacino's presentation of the Best Picture winner was awkward for a number of reasons. But one of those was not his fault, he claims. People thought it was weird that Pacino did not list all the nominees before announcing the winner, but he claims that was the producer's choice.
Yeah, I guess they're saying that all 10 had been at least shown throughout the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was clear. I just still think there was supposed to be some sort of list of the nominees, because one of the things, one, it was so anticlimactic the way that he read it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what most people are just, you know, upset about or were taken back by, was just how nonchalant he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, I thought what I saw was that as soon as he said it, they were scrambling to get Christopher Nolan and the Oppenheimer crew on camera.
Yeah.
And that led me to believe that the cameras were elsewhere. They were going to look at other directors first, mm-hmm. right? And make their way around from camera to camera.
Yeah, and I mean, he might be just throwing the producer under the bus because he's embarrassed, and the producer's probably like, okay, it's Al Pacino, I'll take one.
Right.
You know, who knows? And poor Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, how they live this life. It's so daunting. It's I don't know how they keep up. They jetted into Los Angeles from Singapore. Now, when you read that, you think, oh my gosh, why'd you have to come back to the States? Like, right. Somebody's parents dying? Like, what's going on? Uh-huh. Oh, no. They had to attend Madonna's post-Oscar party.
Of course. Right. So, and here,
Tay-Tay and Treve, that's tough.
The rest of the world is complaining about losing 1 hour sleep on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I know.
let's go 9 hours back in time to party.
It's unbelievable, these two. And, you know, somebody said about the time change, and I think it was a great idea. If we moved it instead of 2 a.m. on a Saturday night to 4 p.m. on a Monday, everybody would suddenly love the time change. Lucky.
Yeah.
When I was young.
Uh-oh.
I never needed anyone. And making love was just for fun.
All right.
Those days are gone. Living alone, I think of all the friends I've known. But when I dial the telephone, nobody's home. Those are the lyrics to the saddest song ever.
It is a really sad song.
It's brutally sad. And in the 1970s, if you had gotten your heart broken as a teenager,
right.
All this would have sent you over the deep end. Eric Carmen, All By Myself.
Wow.
I mean, he had a string of hits. He had more than that. I mean, that I just love it because it's just so fromage.
Yeah.
But he did all right. He was with a band called the Raspberries way back when. And then they broke up. And then he went solo. And he had hits like Never Gonna Fall in Love Again. Of course, All By Myself. Hungry Eyes and Dirty Dancing. So he did all right.
Yeah, Hungry Eyes was on the... Did he do both? Hungry Eyes was that Dirty Dancing theme song, right? Was there a song called Dirty Dancing?
There might have been. I guess there must have been. I don't know. I have not listened to that soundtrack in some
time. Right, yeah.
But I'm going to assume. Was Hungry Eyes a part of Dirty Dancing?
Yes, for sure.
All right. I get that confused with the... what was the big hit you love from the Top Gun? That was Kenny Loggins.
That was Kenny Loggins, yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, how did the Kleenex company not get on to All By Myself as their, like, basically theme song?
Oh, yeah.
Because you think about how many Kleenex must have been used when listening to that song at some point for every broken heart that was out there.
Hard to be sure. Sometimes I feel so insecure. And love so distant and obscure remains the cure.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
Just 74.
Died in his sleep.
In his sleep, they've not listed any cause of death.
Yeah. A broken heart.
It could be.
And I think the album, I remember the album, because my mom had brought it home. She worked at a library, and so one of her many part-time jobs. And she, back then, you could take out records.
Yeah.
And so she'd always, whatever new record had been put out, she'd grab it and bring it home for us to listen to. And so she had brought that home. And I remember it was like a yellow covered album and then a kind of a silhouette of his face. And then the actual song was like 7 or 8 minutes long. So they cut it down for the radio edit. But I can only imagine if you're sitting listening to that 8 minute version and you're already down in the dumps with a broken heart.
Man.
You're down under that water in that tub.
I'm just picturing. I mean, for some reason, I always picture like Ben Stiller in Something About Mary. Like, yes. Like sobbing uncontrollably.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a thing of beauty. Eric Carmen passing away at the age of 74. Look who joins us. Christian Pritchard. Somewhere Doug Elliott is crying because he feels like Christian's cheating on him.
I am.
Yeah. Well, with your
afternoon delight, it's morning feels, which is really great because I've never come into a studio with Vaseline on it. Is this all about?
Lucky's got to do his part of the job.
Craig's been playing our Eric Carmen all morning long.
Hungry eyes.
Oh, yeah. Not as good as All By Myself, though. I'll tell you
kind of the same thing if you get into it, Hungry Eyes and All by Myself.
Sure. I guess. I just know he was great. And we were saying earlier that 1970s, if you had your heart broken as a teenager, that song would have put you right over the edge.
Is that Craig Venn 1970s Brampton?
Oh, long Peter Frampton curled permed hair. Can you pull that mic a little closer to you just so we can, there we go.
You know, such a pro. I thought this was a pan or something.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, you might have
such
to hold
a pro.
It. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just because as it slips
place.
Away, you say, oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Eric Carmen Studios. Better built. Anyhow, we got into some discussion some time back about meatballs. Now, I can't quite remember how this started. I know that you and I have talked, like when we've been at the joint and other places, we're always talking food.
Yeah.
And I guess I must have shared with you at some point how my mother-in-law makes great meatballs and how I've learned. And I think I make a hell of a meatball. I guess that's kind of how it started, and then you said you did a great meatball.
Well, no, you know, the thing is, too, all I hear about is your damn meatballs.
Sure.
You know?
We'll have to talk about meatballs.
And so, you know, it's great because we could be at, you know, things that we do for the radio station or even socially out somewhere. You're like, you go on and on about these meatballs. And I think, you know, is this the Italian connection, you know, the lovely Maria or what? It's like, and then we sort of got into it, like, you know, and I think the thing that got me was you're like, hey, Maria, do I make the best balls?
Right, right.
And you were like, and I was like, because I dealt with this all the time working with Italians, as you know.
Yeah, at Aurora Foods.
Right.
Yeah.
And traveling and stuff. And it's funny. Never deal with any of this stuff when I go and work in Italy. But like, I'm serious.
Oh, really?
They're all like, oh, that's great. You do our food. Why?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's terrific. So when you get back to Canada, everyone's like, oh, well, what do you know?
Right.
You know?
That's probably true of all cuisines in this country.
Like,
if within an Indian culture or Asian culture, they're always going to look at guys like you or me and go, you don't know how to cook our food.
It's funny until you go to the other countries.
Yeah.
And they're like, ah, that's really cool that you do that.
Right.
I mean, I've always found that I've been really fortunate to work a lot of places. It's like when you go down to, you know, the Caribbean and it's like, oh, they just think that's really cool that you do it.
Right.
And it's, you know what it shows to people when you travel is respect to their culture.
Right.
That you love it.
Right, right.
Because I always say to people, what are your two cuisines you like cooking the most? And I always say Italian and Jamaican.
Right.
And they say, how's that similar? I'm like,
right.
They are. And they're like, no, they're not. I go, yes, they are. It's all made, you know, it's the food of the poor.
Right.
Made by grandmothers. And it's all really, really amazing and simple, right?
Right.
So, being treated, you know, from the Caribbean, your family, right, Mike?
Right. Yes. And I'm still shocked that you do Caribbean food, but, only more surprised that I get Christian Pritchard and Craig Venn.
Yeah.
The two of you, who say you do Italian meatballs, but then show the British roots in both of you that you argue to the point that you've got to square off and fight in some sort of meatball off.
And we're actually going to get this decided. This war will be ended on the 28th of March in Oshawa at the Event Center because one of the great all-time chefs, a good buddy of yours, which I have a concern for, is coming out to judge.
Yeah, should I mention who
it is? I think you can. If he's already agreed and said yes.
Yes, he has.
Okay.
My good friend, but this doesn't mean anything. It's like saying Ted Reeder.
Okay.
Ted Reeder's coming out.
He's
going to
be a part of it, yes.
Of course. My older brother, who treats me like an older brother, hates me. But I'm really happy to announce that Massimo Capra.
Chef Capra
is coming. Who is a good friend, but trust me, folks. Just because he's a friend doesn't mean I'm going to get judged nicely. It's going to be a lot harder.
I'll tell you what's going to happen with old Massimo. The minute he touches my balls, he's going to throw his apron away and say, I'm done.
He just might.
I'm done. The meatball cannot be made any better.
He is. And you know, the thing is with a guy like that, too, it's like you're getting all that skill. You're getting all that humor. You're getting someone who just loves food. And you know what? This is where I might have to throw in the curveball because if you look at all, you know, just doing Italian, it's not just Italian, the meatball. It's a great, you know, peasanty, simple, great food that has been, you know, encompassed all over the world with different types of meat and stuff too. Agreed. I think the Italian one is my favorite and the best.
Yeah.
But there's a heck of a lot of great ways to do it, right?
Yeah. No, that's very true. And so, we're going to go to battle. We're going to have a bunch of rock listeners, can come out to this event. We're finalizing all the details because the money's going to charity.
Yeah. It will be a ticketed event, right?
Yes,
and
it will be.
Feed the Need in Durham is the charity.
Yes. And you know what, Craig, at the end of the day, after I throw you my curveballs, And hopefully we come out on top. I should say hopefully. When we do, we'll see. I mean, at the end of the day, listen,
I've never met two less confident people going into a battle than you two. Mike, listening to this conversation off the air, the worry that's going on about these meatballs.
The victory is for Feed the Need.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. Right?
And that's why I agreed to do this, because usually, why would I waste my time with you? I'm only kidding.
You know, sometimes, I'll just say this, and this is an ageism, none of that going on, but sometimes somebody who, I don't know, teaches people how to drive cars or teach people how to golf or any career, sometimes they need an update. And my friend Christian, you're getting updated. You can put your cuchara down already. This is over.
Listen to you.
I know.
Listen to you.
I got the words.
I'm sure you're like gabagool.
I got to tell you, I saw my mother-in-law, this was past Friday, and I was literally begging her, can you please just cook these meatballs for me? She goes, you're in trouble. I'm going to get you out.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that you actually admitted on air.
Yeah.
That you're like, I'm going to get my mother-in-law.
I'm begging anybody.
I'm in
a panic state over here. I mean, because there's one thing when you cook at home,
yes,
right? It's your kitchen. It's your stuff.
Here comes the stress, folks.
Yeah. It's your stove. You just know how it all works. I remember, like, we went up to my son's, when he was living up in Iqaluit, and we went up to visit him for a week, and he loves chicken marsala. And I used to always make it for him at home in my kitchen, always turned out great.
Yeah.
So when we got up there, we went to the grocery store, and we treated, because all that food is so expensive up there, right? But we treated, and we wanted to make him his chicken marsala. And I got on his stove, and I got going, and it was like I had never made it before in my life.
You know what? That is so funny you should say that, because one of the things with traveling and working in food, it's like being a musician.
Mm.
You know, like we have our tools, and the tools could be the stove, that could be the knives, it could be your tongs if you're Ted Reeder, you know?
Right.
But it's like having a guitar or, you know, like you hand someone else another instrument that's not their bass or their guitar. They're like, oh gosh,
right.
What am I going to do?
Right.
But, you know, for me, the fun thing that I've found is I've traveled and worked in kitchens all over the place, and that does happen. But you still have, the worst thing is I find, even when I was in Italy, the equipment we have here were spoiled. Mm. I was using plastic bowls, and I'm like, what the heck is this? But you see, at the end of the day, it's not about that.
Right.
It's not about the equipment. We can always, like, you have to bring the A game to the thing, and it's like, the moment you start saying, well, I can't play this instrument, well, I'm like, hey, you're Alex Lyson. Right. You can't play Spirit of Radio? I mean, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's the way it is.
I get it.
We're also excuses to me, folks.
Right. Yeah.
Well, listen, I just know that I don't fry my balls and stick them in Bravo, but you do whatever you do.
Holy cow. Wow. All right. So now we know the date, right?
March 28th.
March 28th.
Yes.
It's the day before Good Friday.
It's going to be Good Friday.
So you've got a whole long weekend to recover from the food poisoning. that's good. We know it's at the Bond Street Event Center.
Yes.
Right?
What a venue, Mike.
All right. I haven't been there.
Absolutely beautiful venue. Proud to have it in downtown.
Looking forward to it.
We know Craig Venn versus Christian Pritchard. We know meatballs.
We know you're going to be there.
I'm going to be there, but just eating, I think.
Ted
Reeder's going to be there. Massimo Capra, Doug Elliott will be there. He's putting this whole thing together. More details to come. It's for Feed the Need in Durham.
Absolutely.
Is the charity. So we're going to raise money for them through ticket sales. And we'll have more details coming soon here on the station and on our website. Correct?
I feel a grand mal seizure coming on.
Is that for you or me?
No, me. I'm having a stroke.
Well, you mentioned it now. You're pot committed.
Yeah, I am. I'm
to give you a story
in.
On that so you can think in terms of where you're at. I actually did on a big morning show TV across Canada a sauce challenge against a Nona.
Oh, really?
So like against a grandmother. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And just to put myself behind the eight ball, we chose three Nonas. So three Italian grandmothers to be the judges.
And how'd you do?
Well, I lost. You know?
Right.
I lost.
You're never going to beat those ladies.
But Christian's coming in with a record of 0-1.
Oh, I've had many 0-1s.
Yeah. It's going to be a challenge for sure. The meatball off, the Munja Cake meatball off, Christian Pritchard and myself, March 28th. We will have more details as we get closer to it, and I'll find myself in emergency on the 27th.
Curveballs.
I got to mention this, because every time I see it, I tell myself to bring it up and then I forget to. So there is a photo that you use for our podcast. You've got a whole bunch of different ones from us emceeing shows and such.
Yeah.
And the one that you used yesterday and you've used before, I noticed something strange about it.
Okay.
If you look at me, it looks like I've got a prison pipe down my pants. It looks like I've gone on stage when I rammed a cucumber down there.
Well, I'm happy to say I've never looked that closely at that part of the photo.
Well, sometimes I will look at both of our pants, like, because some of the photos are from behind us and some are in front, and I notice I have zero arse. I figured that out from those photos.
Right.
And in this particular one, it looks like on my, I guess, right leg, maybe, it looks like I got a pipe going down my leg.
Oh, my God. Now you're going to force me to look?
Yeah, you got to look. Everybody should. Yeah.
Well, you see, the thing is, when it's posted, it's just a thumbnail that's on there.
That's right.
Right.
So on the SoundCloud, it's the full picture.
Right.
On Facebook, it kind of gets cut off at the waist. And on X, the audio bar is going across it. So it does get blanked out most of the time. But when I am at home, I'm fascinated with my prison pipe.
Right. Yeah. I think you are grossly overestimating. You could be carrying a toothbrush.
No, from my eyeline, that's a prison pipe in there.
I think shadow plays a big role.
It's probably, yes.
What's on stage here?
Might be a bit of a crease in the pants and some shadowing. I'm just saying, if you blow that up as a billboard, people are going to tune in. It'll be a prison pipe and Lucky in the morning. I think we all know that kids probably spend way too much time on their phones.
Uh-huh.
And half of teenagers acknowledge that they do spend too much time on their phones and admit they spend too much time on social media. Teen girls are more likely to admit they're spending too much time on those things than teen boys. And a whopping 95% of teens say they have access to a smartphone. And in a separate study, most of teens say they use at least one of the five major social media platforms, YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, and Facebook, almost constantly.
Wow.
On it all the time.
Right.
And, you know, as much as it's easy to point at the parents and say, well, you've allowed this, in a lot of ways, their hands are tied because schools have made it so you got to have a phone. And it's funny that battle of schools don't want the phones in the classroom.
Right.
But then the kids need the phone for whatever it is, assignments or messages from their teacher. Or,
yeah.
You know.
Well, there's phone or computer. They need a device of some sort.
Yeah. Because
that's how everything's, you know, handed in and yep. handed out these days. It's a constant battle and a struggle. And we're seeing that too. It'll be interesting to see, you know, as this generation progresses on. Because, you know, I know things like, you know, like TV, and you talk TV ratings come out for the Oscars and they're way up.
Mm.
But this next generation doesn't consume things in whole parts like that.
Oh, anymore. Yeah. No,
right. It's all right. Done in less than 10, 20 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. TV, certainly network television. If I was working within network television, I would be pretty concerned about the future.
Right.
You know, we've seen a lot of cuts in radio over the last decade or so. And I bet you're going to see a lot of that in the next decade or so in network television.
Right.
Because the only thing young people are doing when it comes to the TV is streaming. They don't want to see commercials. They just want to see what they want to see.
Yeah, well, and even the whole parts of it. Like, I can't get my kids to watch a hockey game when I'm on the hockey game. Instead, you know, they'll later on be like, hey, that was a good goal call. Because they just see,
right?
They'll watch the snippets, you know, the highlights.
Yeah, well, my kids were young and I was, you know, actually on the air and doing a morning show. They'd never listened to that either. I'd say to Maria, well, they're getting ready for school.
Yeah.
How can you? Oh, they've got their headphones on.
Doing other things.
They don't care. As long as we keep the roof over their head and food on the table, that's all they need us for. But it now the only control parents can have, and we used to do this with the computer, certainly with us, our oldest son, because he was way more addicted to it than our younger one was. But in like summer holidays, March break, we'd say, okay, you can have it for a couple hours in the morning when you get up,
mm-hmm.
and then you're done with it. I want you, certainly in the summertime, I want you outside playing.
Right.
Then when it gets too hot later in the afternoon, you can come back in and you can go on it again till dinner or something. And then that is that. So maybe like 4 hours a day tops.
What was the original threat, you think? Because that's the, you're right, that's the parent tool. Right, right. Now I threaten to take away either the Wi-Fi or the phone itself.
Right.
Right. Before, for my generation, it was the TV.
Yep.
Right. Before that, I guess the radio.
Oh, grounding. You're always grounded to your room.
What was before that? Just grounding?
A beating. Just an absolute. Take out the belt, the shoe, the spoon.
I guess so.
And whip their arse. Yeah. I mean, now, too, I guess with kids even saying, I'm going to, you know, turn off the Wi-Fi. Well, they've probably got data on their phone,
right,
so they don't need your Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And you're paying for their data.
And to take away, you know, the phone now. It's interesting. I see it happen all the time in my household because it's the threat. And it's the threat. It's the threat. And then when it actually happens, it's the shock. Well, now what do I do?
I watched something unfold at my remote on Saturday where I this made me insane.
Oh, you were at Team Town Sports?
Yes. This dad comes strolling into to the store, his son behind him. His son's got on some little suit and his baseball cap backwards, and he's probably, I don't know, 12 or 13 or something. He's got the suit pants are way short, and he's wearing white running shoes. And he's got some juice cup in his hand and his phone in his other hand. And they go to the hockey gear, and he's looking down the entire time. And his dad is picking out something new for him. Maybe his stick broke. I don't know. I couldn't watch the whole thing because my anger was rising. So, and the kid's on his phone, and the dad is going, well, what about this stick? What about this stick?
Could care less.
And the kid could care less. And I'm like, you little snotty brat. Your old man is dumb enough to be dropping probably $200 or more, God knows, on this stick, and you act like you could care less.
Right.
I would say to him, you know what? You're paying for the stick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just, but the dad just, well, we need a stick. Game day. Come on, sweetie. What kind of stick should we get you? Shut up. Oh, and I, that's why I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure you're the same with your kids. Because I swear, I went, this is Lucky and one of his kids.
No, I threaten much better than that.
Oh, this guy wasn't even threatening.
I know. That's what I mean.
He was just, I'm going to get your stick. And that juice, it was a large one. You know, he probably needs the energy drink before the game. That juice alone was probably $37. Oh, kids are the worst.
Rock Mornings with Craig Venn and Lucky. 94.9 The Rock.